This is New Media Beat on OWWRO Westbury Web Radio. I'm Amadi Lee Kane.
And I'm Judy Imasoji. Today we have media news from the UK, Australia, Gaza and Israel, Russia, Venezuela, Cuba, India, and Sudan.
From the United Kingdom.
Are young Brits getting their news from social media instead of traditional news organizations? Where is the future of news in the UK?
From Australia.
Why did the Australian government make X pay a fine? What did this penalty have to do with the problem child abuse content on social media?
From the Israeli-Palestine war in Gaza.
Can you trust what you see on social media? How much misinformation or disinformation is being shared about the fighting in Gaza?
From Russia.
How much control does the Russian government have over the film industry in Russia? Can filmmakers express themselves freely, or are movies censored?
From Venezuela.
Is there an independent news media in Venezuela, or has the Maduro government shut down the opposition press? Where can you find accurate reporting about Venezuela?
From Cuba.
How much freedom do journalists and media workers have in Cuba today? Is there a free press, or does the government still dominate the news media?
From India.
Can people in India express themselves freely online? Who controls the internet, the private sector, or the government? How much internet freedom is there today in India?
From Sudan.
Has artificial intelligence gone to war in Sudan? Who is using AI voice cloning to create fake content in the war in Sudan?
All this and more coming up on OWWRO Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York and College at Old Westbury.
Let's talk with Crystalie Almanzar about the news consumption in the United Kingdom. Where do British young people get their news? Is there a generational shift in the way people consume news in Great Britain? Are young people leaving the mainstream news media behind and using social media for their news updates? Crystalie, what are some of the most popular news sources in the UK?
Great question, Judy. The most popular news website in the UK is the BBC News. According to Press Gazette, quote, 59% of people who use news websites said they counted BBC News as among their source.
How does age impact the kind of news people are accessing?
Well, social media has dominated the world with its ability to connect with people and provide entertaining content. Children and young adults have quickly gravitated towards various social media platforms and has become a tool for exposing information to the public. So what type of news is catching the attention of teens and young adults, and could this contribute to the rise of social media and accessing news? Well, according to Financial Times, quote, the regulator found the age group had a weak relationship with traditional media, with less than half watching TV channels for their news and only about a 6% reading print newspapers. Instead, they were drawn to lighthearted news on social media, dominated by celebrities, sports, and music, with 63% accessing it on mobile phones. If young adults are paying close attention to celebrities, sports, and entertainment news, would this affect their awareness regarding current events in the UK?
What percentage of young people in the UK access news online?
Cell phones have become increasingly convenient to younger people as it provides everything they need. Why buy a TV when you can stream your favorite shows and movies? Why watch the news on television when it can be accessed through our smartphones? As for the older generations, technology and them don't seem to go hand in hand. This would explain why a large percentage of older people have continued to watch the news from their TVs and not online. According to Ofcom News, consumption in the UK 2022 and 2023 report reveals that older teens and young adults aged 16 to 24 are much more likely to consume news online than adults generally, 83% versus 68%. And usually it's via social media on their mobile phones, 63% versus 39%.
Will social media be the primary source for news?
Before the internet, people relied on newspapers, radios, and broadcasting as their primary source of gathering information. Nowadays, if a video goes viral or if there's groundbreaking news that is shared with the world, a majority of the time you will hear a person say that they saw it on TikTok or they read an article about it on Facebook. As technology has advanced and evolved, it is evident that within the younger crowd, they obtain their news through social media. According to Press Gazette, quote, younger people were instead more likely to say they use social media as a news source. Over half, 58% of 18 to 24-year-olds, and 46% of 25 to 34-year-olds said that they got their news from social media compared to 29% of people aged 45 to 54.
Will traditional news cease to exist?
As social media continues to dominate the news media industry, and there is a possibility we may start to see a decline in traditional news. One of the challenges will be how to appeal to Gen Z and future generations over time when technology has made them so heavily dependent on social platforms. Social media has created a domain that is so versatile, people can find news stories and information through Instagram live videos, podcasts, and even tweets. However, there is still hope for traditional news, as many people still find social media as an unreliable source and will continue to watch broadcast news. For New Media Beats, this is Crystalie Almanzar. Back to you, Judy.
Thanks, Crystalie. Let's talk about Australian media with Aidan Bongiorno. The Australian government is cracking down on the distribution of images of child abuse on social media. They hope that the big tech platforms will help in this fight against content that shows children being abused. Aidan, what part of the government is responsible for protecting Australians from predatory content online?
That is a great question, Judy. So the ones responsible is the eSafety Commissioner, which was launched by the Online Safety Act, or OSA for short. So this act is a law noting that all online service providers are required to report on how they crack down child abuse content on their platforms.
What is the eSafety Commissioner?
So Australia's eSafety Commissioner is the one responsible for making sure that all these major social platforms are taking a huge steps into tracking down content that could possibly lead into child abuse. And that goes for every major platform. However, recently, there was one major platform that failed to do their part, which, of course, was X, as they are being fined by Australia's eSafety Commissioner for failing to provide their explanation on how they are tracking down content containing multiple instances of child abuse. According to Julie Grant, who is Australia's eSafety Commissioner, she spoke out in regards to X by saying that X has stated publicly that tackling child sexual content is their number one priority for the company. But it can't just be empty talk. We need to see words backed up with tangible action. And since they failed to provide an answer, they are being fined for $308,000 for failing to respond.
Is it just X?
So Australia's eSafety Office has sent multiple memos out to major tech companies, so it's obviously not just X out there. So these companies include like Google, TikTok, Twitch, and Discord. They were provided multiple questions about how they would handle child abuse content, and they were asked to respond to those questions. While most of them provide the necessary answers, X left out most of the questions with no answers. Some examples include not being able to identify how long it takes for them to respond to reports on child abuse and how they detect content that contains child abuse on their platforms. And of course, X is not the one being faced with a warning about this. In fact, recently, Google was also issued a warning about how generic their responses were when dealing with child abuse. In fact, Lucinda Longcroft, who is one of the directors of government affairs and a public policy for Google, she said, "Protecting children on our platforms is the most important work we do."
How does the OSA protect users?
So according to the Australia's Online Safety Act, our laws need to keep pace with advances in technology and the threats we face online from harmful behavior and toxic content. These modern times of rapid change and social upheaval call for robust new laws. So this law indicates that all major tech platforms must prove that they are fully committed to keeping their content safe and enjoyable, for those in Australia, while heavily tackling down on content that could pose a major threat online. As for X, with the platform failing to describe their take on tracking down any content that could lead to child abuse, they are forced to pay a major fine for not providing valid responses. And if X continues to disappoint eSafety commissioners, they could face even more fines for every day that they don't respond. For New Media Beat, I am Aidan Bongiorno. Back to you, Judy.
Thank you, Aidan. Thousands have been displaced, injured, or killed in Gaza in response to the violent Hamas attack on Israel on October 7. Let's talk about the role of social media and misinformation in this tragic war.
People around the world are getting their war news on social media, but how much of that news is accurate? My co-host Judy Emisoji has a report for us about the false information being shared on social media. Judy, can you start us off by making a distinction between misinformation and disinformation? What is the difference between misinformation and disinformation during wartime?
Misinformation is false or inaccurate information and pretty much getting the facts of the situation wrong. Disinformation is false information which is deliberately intended to mislead and intentionally misstate the facts.
How is fake news being spread?
Fake news is being spread on various social media sites like Instagram, X, and Facebook, mainly in the form of shock-generating headlines. One example includes a tweet posted on October 15th with a CNN reporter, Sarah Sidner, tweeting on the official CNN X account stating that bodies, babies, and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated in southern Israel after the Hamas attack, which was later retracted for being untrue. Fake news is also being spread due to social media sites limiting or restricting pro-Palestine posts. Users and activists claim that the biggest social media platforms in the world are limiting the distribution of content. A Belgian activist and filmmaker, Thomas Maddens, used the word genocide to describe a video he uploaded to TikTok about Palestine after he suddenly ceased receiving engagement on the platform. Several users have claimed that Instagram, a Meta company, has unfairly removed postings that make reference to Palestine because they don't follow community guidelines.
What are some misinformation posts, and what do they say?
In one case, a video allegedly showing dozens of young girls being abducted as trafficking victims by a soldier identifying himself as Palestinian began to make rounds on the internet. The footage, however, most likely came from a school excursion to Jerusalem. If you look closely and analyze the video, you can make out happy girls using their phones and speaking and laughing. Also, a brief video labeled "Arm Hamas Men Infiltrate an Israeli Music Festival Using a Paraglider and Launch a Massive Attack Resulting in Numerous Casualties" was posted on the platform X. Later, it was discovered that the footage showed Egyptian paratroopers soaring over Cairo's Egyptian Military Academy.
What are social media sites doing about it?
A spokesperson for Meta, Andy Stone, cited a glitch for pro-Palestine posts decreased reach in a post on X on October 15th. He put out a statement saying, "This bug affected accounts equally around the globe and had nothing to do with the subject matter of the content, and we fixed it as quickly as possible." Next, a TikTok representative told Al Jazeera that the app does not moderate or remove content based on political sensitivities. The platform also eliminates content that violates community guidelines, which apply equally to all content on TikTok. Al Jazeera reached out to YouTube and X for a comment, but neither company responded.
What are the governments doing?
Well, various UN delegates made recommendations for how to combat misinformation on the internet. The speaker from the United Kingdom stated that misinformation and disinformation must be addressed while respecting the right to free speech, while Australia's delegate asked the UN to address the entire range of issues related to information manipulation. Sarah Ahmed Al, a delegate representing Yemen, demanded stricter procedures for fact-checking information prior to sharing it online. For New Media Beat, I am Judy Emisoji. Back to you, Amadi.
Thanks, Judy. Let's jump from Israel and Palestine to Putin's Russia. Russia is also a nation at war. The state plays a controlling role in Russian media. What about the movies? Daniel Jefferson is here in Studio A to tell us about film and censorship in Putin's Russia. Can filmmakers and actors in Russia express themselves freely? How much control does Putin's government have over the film industry today? Daniel, what is the role of the state in the film industry in Russia? Are there independent movie production companies in Russia?
Thank you, Amadi. There are a lot of control the Russian government has over the film industry. Many filmmakers try to make independent films in Russia, but for the most part, they are not reviewed well and are very low quality because they don't have the backing of big filmmaking studios to help them. They just don't stand a chance against the mainstream Russian films.
Why do Russian actors stay out of any political talks?
Russian actors stay out of political talks because they are afraid that they may get blackballed from the Russian film industry if they say something that may get the Russian government upset with them. It's just not worth losing your job to the actors to speak their minds. So instead, they just stay out of it and just do their job as actors.
What does the Russian government do to films that makes them look bad?
They ban films that speak ill about Russia in any way, including political leaders or the military. There's basically no freedom to make whatever they want in the film industry if there's any kind of political statement that makes Russia look bad. They can make films that make Russia look like a great country, though, which is making many Russian directors feel like they can't create their own vision.
What did film directors do to avoid the film censorship?
Russian film directors have started leaving Russia and making the films that they want to make with their own vision without the fear of their film basically being thrown in the trash because of it being banned or censored. It has been a successful solution because there's been many Russian directors that left their home country and have made big, successful films. From New Media Beat, this is Daniel Jefferson. Back to you.
Thank you, Daniel. Up next, let's talk about the news media in Venezuela. Is there a free and independent press in Venezuela today, or does the Maduro government censor the news media?
Close attention to the news media in Venezuela. Where can you go if you want news about what's happening in Venezuela today? Is there an independent news media? My co-host Amadi Lee Kane has been doing the research. Amadi, where do people in Venezuela get their news?
Venezuela has been facing severe media challenges for many years. These challenges are primarily rooted in political and economic factors, resulting in a restrictive environment for media outlets and journalists. The Venezuelan government under both Hugo Chavez and his successor, Nicolas Maduro, has been known for its censorship of the media. This censorship takes various forms, from outright shutdowns of media outlets to indirect pressures like withholding government advertising from critical publications. There aren't many sources to choose from or rely on in Venezuela, but there are a few roses in the concrete to inform the public, such as Espaja.com, Cotejo, Effective Cocoyo, Observatorio Venezolano de Fake News, Cazadores de Fake News, and Observatorio Venezolano de Desinformación.
How can journalists in Venezuela overcome government censorship and media suppression to continue performing their roles?
Journalists in Venezuela can overcome government censorship and media suppression in ways such as embracing digital resilience, forming collaborations, seeking international support, and utilizing alternative distribution channels. These strategies are used in combination, and they can help them continue their crucial work in informing the public and upholding free speech.
What are the root causes of Venezuela's severe media challenges?
Venezuela's severe media challenges, particularly government censorship, have deep-rooted causes in both political and economic factors. The government, led by figures like Hugo Chavez and his successor Nicolas Maduro, has played a central role in these challenges. The political factors involve a desire to control the narrative and limit dissent. Leaders like Chavez and Maduro have been known for their attempts to suppress critical reporting and independent voices. This censorship takes various forms, from outright shutdowns of media outlets to indirect pressures, such as withholding government advertising from publications that challenge the official narrative. Economic factors have also contributed to media challenges. Economic hardships, including hyperinflation and a struggling economy, have made it increasingly difficult for media outlets to sustain themselves independently.
How can independent news outlets like Espaja.com succeed in providing quality and reliable information to the public? And what strategies can journalists use to navigate a challenging media landscape in Venezuela?
Independent news outlets like Espaja.com can thrive in the face of media oppression in Venezuela by utilizing strategies such as digital vigilance, collaboration, international support, citizen journalism, legal advocacy, self-censorship awareness, source protection, and community engagement. And these approaches collectively empower them to provide reliable information to the public while navigating the challenging media landscape. For New Media Beat, I'm Amadi Lee Kane. Back to you, Judy.
Thank you, Amadi. Cuba is close to Venezuela. Michael Amado is covering Cuban media for New Media Beat. Until recently, there has been very little independent media in Cuba. The Cuban government controls all the mass media from TV and radio to newspapers and magazines. Michael, what can you tell us about the media in Cuba? Who owns the media in Cuba? Is there any news media that is not owned or controlled by the Communist Party and the Cuban government?
Cuba remains ranked as the worst country in press freedom in Latin America, according to Reporters Without Borders. All of the major media outlets, televisions, radios, newspapers, and more are being closely monitored by the government. This can be closely connected to the rule of Miguel Díaz-Canel, the president of Cuba. He closely maintains all control over the media and information expressed by the media. The most popular TV channels, Tele Rebelde and CubaVision, are monitored at all times by the state. As well as these TV channels being monitored, the most popular newspaper, Granma, and the widely listened to radio station, Radio Relo, are also under state control. Despite all of these major news outlets being under state control, independent journalists are even restricted and interrogated before posting anything. In terms of global freedom, Freedom House reports Cuba as having a score of 12 out of a possible 100, which lands them in the not free category. The internet itself is a growing issue as they are reported to have a score of 20 out of a possible 100. Regardless of the internet access itself around the country, the increase in disruptors results in protests over prolonged blackouts, food security, and other issues, according to Freedom House. The issue in regards to press freedom is one of the many public issues being faced currently in Cuba.
Why does Cuba censor the media?
Cuba censors the media for a multitude of reasons, one of the biggest being that the government doesn't want anything that portrays them to be incompetent or weak on the internet. No country wants to look weak and have their issues within their country to be expressed and exposed to the world. Cuba wants to hinder the opportunity for the potential threats from other countries or even an upheaval within their own country.
What does this mean for the future of media in Cuba?
After reading all of the information about how the media is closely monitored and controlled by the state government, that the future of media in Cuba is not looking bright. There are a number of reasons for this, some being the state-controlled media, the struggle for internet access, the relationships with other countries, and more. The Cuban government has been cracking down on independent journalists. The Guardian reports that due to the severe economic crisis, domestic opposition, and tense relations with Washington, Cuban authorities are cracking down on journalists. Cuba's stance on press freedom will certainly, without a doubt, hinder the increase in popularity. There does not seem to be anyone jumping at the chance to be an independent journalist in Cuba due to the terrible conditions they face from the government. Human Rights Watch reports a quote from America's director at Human Rights Watch claiming, "Singing a song that the government does not like or reporting the news independently is enough to get you detained in Cuba. The government clearly controls what is put out to the public, and they will resort to severe measures such as detaining and harassing journalists." For New Media Beat, I am Michael Amato. Back to you, Judy.
Thank you, Michael. We have media news from India. How free is the internet in India? India has a massive population. It also has a high-tech digital economy. India is a democracy, but does it have an accessible internet that makes political debate possible?
Let's talk about the internet in India. Is the internet an important part of politics and the economy in India today? How free is the internet? Jalen Gonzalez has a report on the state of the Indian internet for New Media Beat. What about access to the internet? Let's talk about internet penetration and the digital divide in India. Jalen, what percentage of the Indian population is online today?
Thank you, Amadi. Well, in India, they have been making strides in order to improve internet freedom. However, the Modi government seems to take away these efforts little by little. With a score of 50 out of 100 today on the Freedom House, and around 50% being online, India's internet freedom seems to be diminishing since the government regulation seems to be violating user rights and taking away these rights gradually. India has all the core rights like freedom of speech and the right to privacy. Through the spread of censorship on media, disrespects these rights.
Does the Indian government filter and limit content?
Compared to other countries with less internet freedom, India has all the core rights like freedom of speech and the right to privacy. However, the spread of censorship on media disrespects these rights. The Modi government disrespects user rights consistently, which makes it almost impossible to get one's thoughts out fully. Although partially free, Indian government disrespects the freedom that is given to citizens. Some of these restrictions include internet services and mobile internet services, which leaves the Indian people in the dark at times and disables them from posting or letting the world know what's going on with them.
Will internet freedom continue to decrease in India?
Compared to last year, India has experienced less internet freedom as time goes on. They made many efforts and pushed for internet freedom, but the government continues to violate user rights. Although Indian government filters and censors content, Indian citizens might be able to get their internet freedom once again. Through rebellion and protests, they made a statement towards the Modi government in showing how violating taking one's technological freedoms away can affect them. Right now, the people of India may experience declines now, but this may help India come back stronger in the future, as they had in the past.
Do these user right violations benefit the Modi government?
Through controlling what the people say, this may have effects on how the Indian body views India as a whole, especially through polls and elections that are held. In censoring what the Indian people have to say, the flow of information will be in favor of whatever the government wants the people to see. While controlling what they say, the Modi government can also block certain websites, disrupt connectivity, and also put certain blocks on social media platforms. In doing this, they can direct a more positive and straightforward path to showing people only what they should see. However, over time, people realize this and eventually discover that many countries were adopting this same technique in order to control their country's people. For New Media Beat, I am Jalen Gonzalez. Back to you, Amadi.
Thanks, Jalen. There is a lot of political violence in Sudan. The warring factions are using social media as a weapon in this conflict. Akash Singh is reporting for New Media Beat about the use of artificial intelligence in the war in Sudan. Akash, how is AI playing a role in the conflict in Sudan?
This is a great question. In Sudan's ongoing conflict, AI is playing a heavy role in bringing about misinformation about situations such as false political coup attempts, posed as official statements of Omar al-Bashir, Sudan's ex-president.
How is AI technology being used in today's society, and how can it potentially affect global conflicts?
I'm sure everyone knows by now that artificial intelligence is a major part of a lot of our everyday lives. From having your Alexa device set an alarm, to having your Tesla drive you around when you're feeling lazy, AI technology that operates autonomously and through machine learning. AI is used in modern medicine, transportation, science, and education. However, this can have a negative impact on global effects. AI has already been used in military tech to power drones and other weapons.
How has AI specifically been used in the Sudan conflict?
AI voice cloning technology has been used to release false recordings of Omar al-Bashir, Sudan's ex-president. These recordings were a mix of older press conferences and news reports, and were intended to mislead leaders into agreeing that the ex-president had a significant part in the ongoing conflict.
What has the effect been thus far?
AI voice cloning and other AI-based technologies have been used for both good and bad instances, but in this particular situation, it's being used to spread misinformation and psychological warfare.
What are some of the major concerns surrounding the use of AI voice cloning tech, and what is being done to mitigate it?
I mean, while there's no sure way to mitigate AI voice cloning, there are definitely ramifications, including grounds for defamation, copyright infringement, and privacy violations. for New Media Beat, I'm Akash saying back to you, Amadi.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our co-producers, Alex Heiko and Aiden Bongiorno. Our engineer is Alex Heiko. My co-host is Judy Imasoji. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, Amadi. Today we heard reports from Aiden Bongiorno, Daniel Jefferson, Crystal Lee Almanzar, Akash Singh, Amadi Lee Kane, Judy Imasoji, Jalen Gonzalez, and Michael Amato.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWRO Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.